Hey, good afternoon, and welcome to Fire Engineering Hump Day Hangout with this motley crew we got on here today. And we're going to get to talk about some company-level training. Got a good group of people on here that from Traditions and the International Society Fire Service Instructors. And we're going to jump right into that here shortly. But obviously, we always want to thank Chief Halton and the Clarion Events Group for allowing us to do this and allowing us to get our message out. But so before we get too far into it, we want to check in with the boss, man. We got two big events. You got the event coming up, and then, you know, we got, what's the update with 2021 FDIC?
Sorry.
You're muted there, boss. There
you go. I got it. I apologize. Old people. Yeah, don't. I can't believe we're going to entrust the nuclear codes to guys who are older than me. I was just struggling with the TV remote in the other room for about a half hour. So that's how, think that one through, huh? So anyway, FDIC is on track. Everything looks good. I think we're seeing more and more. I was just recently in Richmond with some friends. I know Kirk just had a bunch of guys down at Water on the Fire and gals. So, I think things are starting to move back in the right direction. We're seeing, real promising stuff from the CDC and others about, what's going on with the virus. So it makes me feel good that we're starting to get a grip on what's happening and figuring a whole bunch of good stuff out. And, it reminds me about an important adage, and especially when we're talking about company level training drills, which I think training drills should also incorporate. I just bought a really great brand new piece of workout equipment, a commercial total gym. I bought the Encompass, the incredibly overpriced piece of workout equipment, but beautiful. And I think that drills, part of our company officers training, I think in the future, and probably among some of your organizations, you're probably already doing it, is teaching them how to be better physical trainers, right? Teaching men and women how to do exercises more correctly. And there's a lot of great stuff on YouTube and other places for different gym stuff. But as I started working out on my new Total Gym, I went on YouTube and I was looking at some of the workouts and trying to follow along. I got crushed by the beginner stuff, just crushed. It was like, the guy kept saying, just do as much as you can. And I'm like, yeah, that's true. I'll do as much as I can. But I think we're talking about company officer drills. We always look at the hose line movement. We look at, opportunities during inspections. We look at, the saving our own. We probably should talk today about, Brian Quinn yesterday, 59 engine. In Harlem, and what an incredible, he's in the stratosphere with Kevin Shea and Mike Dugan and many others who've, perform incredible rope rescues. But, physical drills, workout drills, getting guys good training. Dan Kerrigan and his guys do a great job of teaching us how to be better, physical trainers. Because really, if we're going to do something for our people, you can have the greatest mindset about how to affect, a certain drill or technique or task on the fire ground. If you physically can't do it due to limitations, that's a bad, bad thing. So probably one of the very first things we should focus on in our, company officer drills is the actual fitness, flexibility, limberness, physical capabilities of our actual men and women we're working with. And to that extent, I used to have it framed because Bruno once said it. Bruno told me years ago, he'd lost some weight suddenly about, 15 years ago, 10, 15 years ago. And I say, Chief, I see you dropped some weight. He said, yeah. I said, what happened? He said, I went to the doctor. I said, oh, everything okay? He said, oh, yeah, yeah. He said, the doctor looked at me and said, Alan, there's no old fat guys. So that would be, I'm just going to throw that out there to start us off. I think that when we look at company officer drills, man, you can start off at the morning workout, and help, talk about all the, because trying to stay healthy these days ain't easy. As I munch down on my grilled cheese and green chili sandwich.
All right, boss. So we, along with our normal, myself, Richard Riley, Chief Shaw from Florida, and Chief Heller, We have some other people on the show that haven't been on as much. Three of them are affiliated with Traditions Training, and Joshman has been helping us out with a lot of our Zoom stuff that's going on. He just has a brand new video out on fire engineering homegrown training minutes that came out yesterday. So Josh, just kind of raise your hand and so everybody knows which one of you is Josh. That's Josh Burchick. He's a lieutenant with the Howard County, Maryland Fire Department. He did a great presentation for us on a tragic line of duty death RIT operation in Howard County. He'll be presenting at FDIC, that particular program, a phenomenal program. I beg you to go see it. He's a phenomenal speaker. He's learned how not to say and you know like I do every 5 seconds. So he's a greater speaker than I am. But he's a company officer, and part of that program, he talks about the company drills that they did prior to this event that helped them with this event. So that's one of the main reasons I wanted to get Josh on today. We have Roger Steger. Roger is another instructor with Traditions Training and works for the Baltimore City Fire Department at the Jobtown Firehouse. That would be air quotes they put there. So, and then we have Scott Kraut, who's a Traditions instructor and FDIC, who brutally puts people through their paces at FDIC at the hot classes. So, and obviously some of that is stress inoculation stuff that he does. So we'll be going with him. So, so Aaron, why don't you kind of lead us off today? I know we got some things we need to talk about before we actually get on topic. So,
sure. Well, first off, it's great seeing everybody again. We got to the end of the summer, and we're making our way through this thing. But yeah, we'd be remiss if we didn't bring up a special few words about Lieutenant Mark Weiss from Bonita Springs, Florida Fire Department. Mark passed away yesterday. He'd been fighting a battle with pancreatic cancer. I'm sure it was job related. Mark was a really, really solid and very well loved instructor down in Florida. Always taught at, I know, Fort Lauderdale Fire Expo, at Orlando Fire Conference. He was a regular at FDIC and a big member of Fools. Those guys, he really has been inspirational to a lot of people over the last year and a half. We found out that he had cancer right before the prior FDIC. And before he started his treatments, he came to FDIC and then said, I'm going to start my treatments, you know, really the week after he got home. And Mark fought tough, and he really never gave up to the last day. Yesterday we got text messages saying that he was talking to the family. Everybody was around him. He was telling some funny stories, and he passed very peacefully. But certainly want to take a moment for his family, and left behind two young girls and a wife, and a Dalmatian that he had a million pictures of on his Facebook with him. And it's heartbreaking that we keep going through these things and we lose our friends, you know, and we know that this has been part of the job, and it's part of the job we're trying to eliminate. Had the conversation this morning at the kitchen table before I went off duty with the oncoming company about the importance that, you know, we didn't decon ourselves. We didn't switch our gear. We didn't wash our gear. We didn't use, you know, wipes to clean up after a fire. You know, hell, how many guys finished the first bottle, went back in with a cigar or a cigarette in their mouth to do the overhaul, you know, and we know better now. And we just got to prevent these things. If at all possible, we need to try and prevent it. And Mark's hit hard. For those of us that are longtime members of the Fools, like Chief Halton and myself, and I know, you know, you guys have been busy down there with the Fools in Maryland, same thing. We just want to send our love and our condolences out to Mark and his family and the whole Fools family down in Florida, because it's a big, tough loss for all of them. But I'm stoked to talk about company officer stuff. Mark was a lieutenant, so I do this in his honor today. And I spent 20 years as a captain on a pretty busy engine. So we got our chances to drill a lot. So this is going to be exciting for me. So thanks, Chief. You're muted, Rick. There you go.
Got it. Yeah, I'm old. Okay, I got it, Bobby. I got it. So I guess I'm going to try to start off with Josh and kind of lead. Josh brought some pretty good points We were talking about in the later part of his program that he delivered about training. But I thought it was, you know, with today, you know, and like I always say, today's firefighters, and because I have gray hair, they're today's firefighters. You know, I'm not that today firefighter. I don't ride the back step. I don't ride in the bucket. You know, I'm not riding the line at the firehouse that I'm at. You know, I'm driving or in the buggy. So, you know, I'm not that person. So, but obviously we have a bunch of dynamic firefighters and firefighters of different personalities in every firehouse. I mean, I just had to talk Sammy Hiddle off the ledge the other day for about 45 minutes. It was a very short ledge because we didn't want him to get too high up in the air. But, you know, about, you know, dealing with people at the firehouse. So, Josh, how do you deliver this company-level training to all these different personalities that are in the firehouse? And what's the method you'd use to get through to them? And through to them is probably a bad way to say it, but just to get through to all these different people. And then I'll kind of take it around after Josh leads us off and everybody can chime in. We got a big group, so I'll try to keep it moving today. So.
Yeah, no, appreciate it. There's so many places I could take that, and appreciate the Chief Halton saying that bit about physical fitness training. You're speaking to my soul with that one, but that's a whole other topic for another day. I think I try to make it as relatable as possible. We joke, I think each generation jokes that the new generation coming up is, you know, they don't know the expectations of the job, and there's issues with the new generation. And you can look back from the 1920s and the world wars, and each generation was saying that before them. So I think that we just need to have very clear expectations about what we need to accomplish. And there are two main areas that I try to hit. One is the first time you experience a stressful event, it should not be on the fire ground. So that's the first bit that I try to make relatable. And then the second bit is how am I going to make this relatable for what we're actually doing? And that could be, you know, I'm a dad. So I walk into my girls' rooms, you know, 8 o'clock at night when they're getting ready for bed, and it's an absolute mess. I'm like, if I come in this room right now, 3 o'clock or 3 o'clock in the morning when it's on fire, how is that going to affect my operations? You know, we're in, you know, COVID 2020, and all the people that were all shacked up in the early spring are going to have certain babies here soon. You know, we don't have a good way of searching in training environments for a crib or maybe the bassinet next to the bed, or my youngest daughter still gets in bed and sleeps with us every so often. And, you know, there's three or four people in the bed. That's not something we can easily replicate in training scenarios, but how can we replicate it as best we can for what we're going to do, whether we're in the firehouse or in a burn prop building, whatever the case may be. But then we can also relate back to NIOSH reports and near misses. And when we go into every single EMS run we do, like, hey, yeah, we're here for a sick person, but how does the layout of this house affect what we do? If I were to ask you right now where you were in this home because you were trapped, what's your location? Give it out right now. So it's just these constant things where we're just always operating in the background. Every single run we try to take an opportunity to do that. And again, that goes back to experiencing things on the fire ground. It should not be the first time. So we have to build up to that. I hammer the stress inoculation side of things really hard. We just have to work up to that point. Obviously, start with the foundation, start with the fundamentals. If you have 10 minutes, I work on a busy engine, not as busy as Jobtown, but I can, we can 5-10 minutes somewhere. And that might just be pulling lines in the garden apartment. I can't tell you how many people have woken up in the middle of the day. They come out of their garden apartment, they see lines running down the street, and they're like, are we okay? Like, no, we're just taking 10 minutes to train. God forbid we have to come here, we know what to do. And people are super stoked. The community is like, oh, okay, awesome. So you can find 10 minutes a day. There's no excuses. And we just have to remove as much of that as we can, make it relatable. And the harder you make things over time, you can see the morale build with your team. So yes, you have to revisit the small stuff, but over time, if you can make it a little harder, introduce a little bit more stress, get them a little more sweaty, throw a couple curveballs in there that are realistic, you can see the morale and the team effort really come out. So I just covered a ton of stuff and glossed over a lot of things, but these are, I guess, just throwing a couple things at you really quick. Those are some things I start with and try to build towards.
Yeah, you're not getting off that easy, Lieutenant Archer, because, you know, my question is that, you know, hey, yeah, you got the greatest crew in the world. You know, you got all these gung-ho guys riding your engine or your truck with you. But what happens when you don't have that guy that shares the same mindset that you do? That's, you know, I think that's a follow-up question for everybody, is that, you know, it's really, if you have all these people that are gung-ho, how do you get the person that's not gung-ho to get with your expectation plan?
Yeah, first and foremost, again, I try to make it relatable. I can pull any NIOSH and near miss report saying, listen, if you don't have the skill set for what we're trying to accomplish here, this is what can happen to you. Maybe it's not your fault, but something that somebody else is doing, you could be doing everything right. If somebody else does something that's going to affect the situation, the environment that you're in. So you need to have the skill set to be able to overcome this. And sometimes I've had it on the opposite end of the spectrum where they might be cocky, know-it-all, and they do have the skill set to back it up. But I look at the rest of the team and like, hey, they're not there yet. I know you want to skip all these steps, but we have to reverse engineer this. We have to start simply. And I try to throw in a little bit of humility in there. Listen, I need your help. Yeah, we can skip all these steps, but you can look at everybody else and their eyes are glossing over right now. There's actually a little bit of fear and we need to manage that. So I need your help with that. Let's start simple. Help me build them up. I need you in that process because we are a team effort. We're not cops. We're not working in our cars by ourselves. And over time we can build and we can get to the point to where you are right now. And then you can take it and run with it. So it's very individualized, you know, how I need to approach that person. And there are plenty of things I can learn from other people. It's happened where I come into a training environment and I'm thinking, hey, listen, we're going to do these skills. We're going to metro change out, for example. And with our new BA that we're using through MSA, I totally missed a total workaround that takes a lot of stress out of doing a metro change out. And one of the firefighters is like, hey, let's do this. Have we thought about this? Have we considered this? Totally blow the whole training out of the water. And like, hey, you just found something that I wasn't even considering, wasn't even on my radar. So take it and run with it. That was fantastic. So prop them up as much as you can. Have very clear expectations. And again, rope them back to see everything that we're doing here is experience-based. So at a certain point, at the end of the day, if you're not going to hold your end of the bargain up, you toe the line with me for the next hour, and then we'll find another firehouse for you to work out, I guess.
Well, look, I've had a very challenging training environment with Scott Kraut. It was very challenging training, Scott. So now Scott's the big captain. So Scott, in the Hollywood Squares, I'm going down here to you to comment on these two things that, you know, one, how are we delivering training today to the younger firefighters? And then what about the people that are all on the same page as you? How do you train them?
Well, I'll start off. You know, Josh and I think are on the same page, even though we haven't physically met each other. We've talked. Yeah, the first thing is, you know, it's unfortunate, but typically that person that's not on the same page with you in your training environment is the 18, you know, 10 to 18 year guy or girl, you know, who has got it all figured out. My first course of action is can we? Sorry, technology. Somebody tried to call me. We gotta walk before, I mean, crawl before we walk, etc. So the one easy thing is to make these training snippets so that it's not, you know, maxing out the, depending on your rank structure, your senior firefighter or your master technician or technician, that, you know, that they're not, oh, here comes another 4-hour drill, or, you know, we're going to beat this thing all day long in the 100-degree weather or whatever. And so I think once they realize that you're, you know, all you want to do is task-oriented, because as Josh alluded to, those tasks, that running the line in the parking lot's great. And then you're running around six cars with the garden department, and then you make a 500 out of a 300. You know, that's that stress that, you know, that's that building upon the foundation. Because if we don't have a foundation, and we just, we go off of a, I've said this before, a percentage correct world where, you know, somebody has 2 hours to complete a task. Well, 75%, 80% is a pass. Well, that's not how our environment works. You have 60 seconds at 3 o'clock in the morning to pull this off. And so if we never built the foundation, they're just stacking on a diluted task, one on top of the other, until it's just a mess at 3 o'clock in the morning. So I think it's important to shorten. My battalion chief totally disagrees with me on this, but I think just short training environment, short training sets and multiple tasks, you know, depending on how many hours a month you work, it doesn't take long, you know, and the fifth time you're doing, you know, X task, and it is, you know, adding 100 feet to the, you know, 300 and stretching through the garden apartments and this and that and the other, by that time they get it, and then you move on to the next task. You know, the forcible entry, we don't go right into breaking doors down. We talk about the bar and its history and its weight, its length, you know, why 2 inches here means something and 4 inches and 5 inches here means something. And then we, you know, we build on that foundation that, okay, all right, now we'll introduce the door. Now we'll introduce the door with gloves and full gear. Now we'll black you out. Now we'll go down some stairs and do it, and we'll tighten up the hallway. And so, you know, I don't think that, maybe I've just been lucky. I haven't had that, you know, 10 to 18 year person that's just a giant pain in the rear. Yeah, they take a little prodding, but I haven't had anybody, you know, flat out say no. And Josh hit on it too. If you can relate it, which we can almost relate anything, you know, Ricky, when we did that stuff down there in Huntington that year, and everybody's like, oh, we should have real fires. And it's like, no, I don't think you want to see that just yet. You know, let's start small. because, you know, we're not as good as we think we are, maybe, you know, and so those small tasks become larger and more fast paced. And we ultimately want to achieve mastery, which are accurate, you know, fluency, which is speed and accuracy, I think is the goal for all of us. I hope that answered your question. And then ultimately I get them off, train them till they want to leave.
Okay, so you and Josh are on the same page with that one.
Oh, yeah.
So look, we'll finish up that Baltimore, Washington region. We'll finish up that Baltimore, Washington region, and, you know, head to Florida and to Chief Heller and go around the table here. So, Roger, you've been the acting officer, you know, at the one of the busiest engines in Baltimore City, and obviously, you know, that's a big department, and not everybody is on the same page every day, but obviously they certainly get indoctrinated to the world of fire there in Baltimore City. So how do you get everybody on the Baltimore City Engine 8 way?
That's definitely a tough one. Far between everybody's going to be on the same page or wavelength across the whole place. But like Josh and Scott, I'll echo a lot of the same things. Just taking the guys that you feel have it, or they feel they have the skill set and everything in the time, the tenure, and using them, getting them to help, whether it be, hey, I really need help bringing these guys up or whatnot. We get a detail person for the day, or at the beginning of the shift, lay out the expectations and go, hey, things might be a little bit different or they might be the same, but this is what you're expected to do, what we're expecting for the day. When we're going through training, is chunk it down to small portions. Have it make sense, make it relevant. It's really all the same stuff. And it's just not knowing who you're going to get for the day. It could be somebody that's from the next engine over that we run together all the time and have a great working relationship, or it could be somebody from the complete opposite side of town that has a month on the job we've never seen or whatnot. So it's just try to sit there and make it the most basic stuff that we can get out there, where what we need them to do for the day, and make sure they have an understanding of that.
All right. Well, Chief Shaw, you mentioned when we were talking to the pre-show, you're just doing a drill in Sol's and full PPE, and, you know, in Florida of all places. But so, I mean, you know, the same question goes to you. I mean, how do we get, you know, through to that younger generation and how do we deal with the people that, you know, that don't necessarily feel that they have to train as a company officer, I guess.
Absolutely. When this was the topic brought to us, I was very excited because I love this topic specifically. And I'll give you two examples, one from when I was a company officer and one now from a different perspective. So back when I was in the streets at my firehouse at 46, I was there for 3 years before going to training. And from day one, the communication was clear. I go, guys, we will train every day. I promise you, I won't waste your time. I'll make it relevant. And this will be something that brings us together. And that's what we did from day one. It was just expectation. And some days it was great. And some days they hated me. But the expectation was set right from the beginning. We will train every day. And for the most part, we did. The good thing was there was an almost instant gratification with that, because we were at a busy firehouse, we were running the calls and we were running the skills and doing the skills that we were training on. Structure fires, forcible entry, car fires, medical calls. So everything we were doing training-wise was there. So we were getting that instant gratification and that teamwork was being built. So the buy-in, it was just a constantly continual buy-in that was being made by the training. So after a while, it just became the norm. And it was just something that was expected. It was just a beautiful feeling after a while. And years later, some of those firefighters that were promoted to driver, I had two came up to me last year and they were like, you know what? I got to thank you. I'm like, thank you for what? Well, all the training we did. I'm like, you liked all that? They're like, no, not really, but it made me a better driver. I'm like, okay, vindicated, validated. But it was that sense of camaraderie and teamwork and that was built from that was just you can't buy that kind of thing. So at that station I was at, it was dealing with some younger folk, maybe from 5 to 10 and some 10 to 15 years on folk. So it wasn't too bad to get the buy-in. But again, I set it right from the beginning. There was no gray area. It was clear as crystal that every day we're going to do something. Just prepare for it. And if we didn't do something, it was like Christmas. Take the day off. Fast forward a little bit, when I was in the training bureau, we had this opportunity with a local garage door company that was about to throw out like 8 panelized, reinforced garage doors. They had to get rid of them. So I'm like, man, we got to use these things. We got to train on them. And it turns out it was August. And I think they're going to throw away the 1st of September. I'm like, well, I got to do this. So I requested the ladder trucks in our city to come to this training. So for 3 days, we had the ladder trucks, whoever's on the ladder truck, come do this training. So you had the most senior people in the fire department, 20, 25, and even plus, coming to this training. So knowing what I was expecting, I did everything in my power to make this a damn good drill. So even before they got there, I prepped the officers. Hey, listen, we're going to be doing some drilling next shift. I got you guys on the schedule. Let me tell you why we're doing this. Let me tell you what's expected. Let me prep you. Let me send you the little video clips, some tools we're going to be covering so you're prepared. In other words, I don't want them showing up blindsided and me making them potentially look bad because they weren't ready for it. So they had a little time to prep. Day of, you can imagine day of in the morning when they walked in, some of the looks I got. It's August in Florida and I'm asking the most senior members in our fire department to get in full gear on air with a saw and cutting a bunch of things. You can imagine the great looks I got. But right from the beginning, we got right into it. I didn't want to waste their time. And I told them, listen, I'm not here to waste your time. We have this opportunity. I love that you're here. You have come with a ton of experience and we're going to harness that today. Got right into it, went over some tools, equipment, refreshed everybody, got out there full gear, chopped up a bunch of doors, made it relevant to them. You know, it's not just a garage door. Look at the back of it. Look at where you're cutting. Look at the construction that differs from our area from the rest of the country. Made it relevant, significant, relevant. And at the end, like every other class that we know, by midstream on, they're teaching the course. They're offering their experiences. They're telling stories about what they did on this fire or that high rise or this scenario and so on and so forth. And by the end of the class, everybody's smiling. They're taking pictures. We're updating Facebook and Instagram. It was one of the best classes I've ever did with the most senior members in our department sweating their rear ends off and having a good time. But that relevancy, that respect for their experience, that no BS, that no Bravo Sierra, just getting right into it, made it relevant for them. So those are just two examples. But I go back to kind of something I said before, and we think we all know this, that those company level drills where the company officers are taking the lead or are a significant part of it, they have that massive influence right there. And if you combine that influence with training, you know, the angle, the path, the platform of training, that's a powerful, powerful influence right there.
Always forgetting unmuted. I got it, Bobby. I got it. Yeah, I know what it's like to try to train people in Florida. So I sympathize with you. So try to get people to do that. So we got a little better climate with Chief Heller. So we don't have to talk about doing cutting doors in 95 degree heat. So so Chief Heller, what are your comments on these, the questions I've been posing to everybody else?
Well, it's good. I think from the time, you know, I like I said, I spent 20 years as a company officer before I got promoted. And as now as a chief, I see such a big difference, but you'll never convince me that the company officer and that level of leadership is by far the most important, piece of the pie to me. So if that company officer can lead and train and get his people involved in it or her people involved in it, everything builds from there. It really does. So what we give them in probie school is great, but then they become real firefighters and firemen when they get into our firehouses. My son is in probie school right now in Atlantic County, New Jersey, and joined a volunteer fire company that I belonged to when I was a kid and that I grew up through. And I'm watching what he's doing in probie school, and I'm thinking, okay, in 4 months, we're going to actually make you into a fireman if you really want to be, because it all starts at the company when they get assigned and they're there. I think one of the things that I think Josh brought it up and Scott reiterated it was, these don't need to be long drawn out drills. That's really, really important, because what happens with the long drawn out drill, the guys start to dread it. Oh, here comes this crap again. You get a windbag of an officer who won't shut up and nothing gets accomplished because they check out. And I've seen that. I've seen that in my own department. And it's something that you have to really stay on top of, because like we said, we're talking about building foundations step at a time, adding some intricate details to it, adding, you know, stretching around cars, adding, you know, getting ladders to the building from the courtyards and things like that, you know, doing a swick drag or something of those things, but making them in pieces, not this massive 3 and 4 hours, boys, you're going to be out here. Okay. Maybe we go out of service for EMS, but we're going to drill now for the next 4 hours stretching and operating. And yeah, when are we doing it? In the heat half the time. So I believe in keeping it kind of tight, keeping it set to what we're trying to do, accomplishing what we set out our goals and our missions were that morning, and then working from that. One thing that in our firehouse that I started when I was a training officer, and Bobby brought it up here in our notes, we have a weekly drill schedule. Basically it comes out every month, and this is what you're doing week 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, if so be it. And you're allowed to do lots more than that if you want, but you've got to get that accomplished. And these are kind of what the training officers and the chiefs have sat down and the company officers and said, hey, where's our weaknesses? Where's our strengths? And in the beginning of every year, when I was a training boss, I would send a questionnaire out to the whole company and say, all right, what do we do good? What do we do bad? Where should I be focusing for us? And I got some really interesting input from the guys, and we tried to kind of formulate it based on that. Like I said, my engine, they're fairly busy. They're not job town. They're not running 25 runs a day, but they're a busy company. So get it in, get it done, and get ready for working when it's really hitting the fan, you know? So I don't want them all beat up. Just like in the gym, they're expected to do some time in the gym. They should be doing an hour in the gym, right? I don't want them doing these Herculean workouts in the morning, because I want them to still have some gas in the tank at the end of the day. And, you know, so I want them to pace themselves a little bit throughout that 24 or 36 or 48, whatever it is. So those are some of the things that I look at. But I think the big thing at the company level really is knowing our weaknesses, knowing what we normally are expected to do, knowing what we might be expected to do, and, you know, getting really good at that. You know, I just had a guy put in a training request the other day, one of the young kids, for a Swiftwater class and for this and that and the other thing. And I looked at it, and it's the first one I've denied this year because he didn't have all his engine truck stuff he needed yet. So let's keep ourselves kind of in line with our mission in our company level training. I think that's really important. So that was a lot of windbagging, Bobby. I talked way too much.
I just had a couple snippets.
I'm sorry, Bobby. Go ahead, sir.
I kind of wish we could share the chat with everybody because some of the jokes in the chat are freaking hysterical. But
yeah, we got to keep dumb things off the screen, Bobby. You
know, so I did ask the group. I'd like everybody to kind of comment. You know, most organizations put out, like Aaron's does, a monthly drill program. And I think to Josh's point and Scott's point, they kind of build. Like week one, you do some basic task. Week two kind of incorporates that, and then another, and then another. Because all of our tactics are basically a compilation of tasks that produce a tactic that blend into a strategy. And one of the books I always used, oddly enough, for over 20 years, this came out in 95. It's just a 52-week drill book that a fellow named Chatterton put out, Howard Chatterton put out in 95. It's a great old book, and it's still relevant today. But we're doing even better. And I think to Scott's point, one of the things we're developing right now, which we'll be unveiling pretty soon, and we're going to be involving all of you guys in it, is we're doing drills in micro-learning, which is exactly what we're talking about. So in other words, we're taking very, very small, 3 to 5 minute, you know, even smaller sometimes, pieces of learning and getting that across, because those foundations is what you want to have, that those mental models, that muscle memory, that ability to, you know, glove up, put your gear on, you know, put the shoulder fold on while you're talking to somebody without having to think about what you're doing, you know, dressing a hydrant, you know, while you're, you know, trying to do three other things, because that's what the fire ground is like. It's, you know, when you get to the fire ground, and please watch Josh's video that we put up today. I did retweet it, and it actually has gotten quite a few people liked it. So hopefully the folks are watching it. Sometimes I wonder if people just say they retweeted it and they don't really watch that. Like, you know, I'm always amazed when somebody retweets something and then I read it and I'm like, why would anybody retweet this? But anyway, so, right there's Ricky.
I'm
retweeting
checking to
right
make
now.
Sure you retweeted it, Bobby. That's what I'm
doing. I did. I swear to God, I did. Yeah. And I put it on, and I think I put it on Facebook as well, on my public figure page. So it's really well done. Thank you for doing that, Josh. It's really, really well done. But to the point of drills and the construction of drills, I think that you guys have so many great tools at your disposal now, because we can use those video formats like YouTube, like I was talking about using the Total Gym. You know, years ago, you'd have to get the book and look at the drill or read the description and try to figure out what the hell's a lateral meniscus super fungal, you know, muscle, who the heck knows? But when you see the person, you know, doing it on the video, oh, okay, I can do that. You know, and it you know, and your lateral obliques are like, I'm never going to have any. But the point being, you know, incorporating some of that technology, I think is wonderful. So I kind of like to see what everybody thinks about, you know, getting some direction from the organization, because I think the training chiefs, and Steve just stepped down as training chief down at his organization to take over the EMS chief's job, right? Steve, did I get that right? So
sir.
I think the training chiefs always have a pretty good handle on, you know, where we are at, because most good training chiefs show up at a job and see something and think, oh, okay, there's next month's drill. You know what I mean? And it's not to demean anybody or abuse anybody, but we forget, you know, we forget as we go through stuff, how important those, you know, basic fundamental things are. One of the things I screwed up on early on as a training officer was, where do we, you know, bunker up? And some of my guys got caught at a doorway. Somebody opened the door, fire smacked them in the face, and a couple of my people got, you know, some burns. God, thank God they were minor, but that's not where we should be putting our gear on, right? I mean, we ought to be putting our gear on a safe distance from, you know, fire being able to smack us in the face. And that's on me as the training chief, right? And so anyway, I just want to throw that out there. And to windbagging, one of the classes I did give one time, that people really liked was I gave a class to all our officers on public speaking, how to give presentations, how to get on camera, how to you know, compose yourself, you know, and how to speak expertaneously with a few key points. There's a great story about Churchill. One time arrives at a speaking lecture and he's got a cabbie taking him. And the guy says, Churchill's in the back, you know, furiously writing something. And he says, well, we're here, governor. And he says, would you mind going around the block one more time so I can finish my expertaneous notes? You know, like he was going to look like he was speaking off the cuff, but never, ever speak off the cuff. Not in a formal setting. Don't ever make that mistake that you're just going to wing it. Not when it matters. So windbags can serve a purpose.
Oh, goodness. Windbags can serve a purpose. I have to get that one stitched behind your head for next week, next month. So look, I kind of wrote down just a couple notes. I just wanted to give some of the brief stuff, especially when Scott was talking. I think Scott and I kind of started many, many years ago about that brief. You know, we did the minute drills, busy firehouse or slow firehouse, keeping somebody's attention span. You know, so in the 80s, when I started as a rookie, you know, it was an hour. You know, we started at 1 o'clock and we drilled to 2 o'clock, and man, it was just some of the most, head nodding, and you know, just because that was the regime. And I think we're trying to change that with Tim Sparrow, one of the people that Scott and I worked with, is just trying to get a quick 5-minute drill in, nothing where it's going to take a huge amounts of the day, and it kept people, one, entertained, and it kept them from nodding off, and especially when you're dealing with a big shift. And when you're dealing with a big shift, I noticed it at the volunteer firehouse one night, is that, you know, they're trying to teach the kid, one of the RIT drills, you know, getting somebody out of a window, and the kid's doing it wrong. I mean, it's like his second time he's done it. And there's like 7 people trying to talk to the kid, you know, trying to tell him what he's doing, what he's not doing, you know, and I had that same problem with Master Technician Sparrows, that, you know, I had all this knowledge that I wanted to impart to this rookie, but it was his job to impart his wisdom, you know, to the rookie, to sign off on his task book. So, you know, finally he says, look, man, we can only have one voice talking to this kid. You know, he can't hear from 7 different directions, you know, and he's trying to digest all that in a new task. So, you know, Timmy taught me, you know, one voice, you know, one topic, you know, let him digest that, get through it, and then we'll move on to the next topic. And, you know, only having that one person kind of talk to him. So I'm going to go down to Josh, because the question I had, because I think, and I forget who said it, I don't know if it was Chief Shaw or Chief Heller, we're talking about that instant satisfaction. So that was Chief Shaw. So, traditional training was founded on RIT training, and we moved away from it, because less, for lack of a better term, we had worn it out. And then people were just not into it. And I don't see much of it anymore. A lot of that RIT training out there where, you know, groups are, you know, like Aaron's group or our group's getting hired to do that sort of stuff. But I mean, cause you know, I'm not sure that people see the validity, and they see it as history, rather than something that could happen today. So, I mean, Josh, I mean, you went through, in your program, you know, how you train your group prior to that fateful day, which, you know, let's be serious, in Howard County, who would have ever thought that day was actually going to come, you know, that we were going to have a line of duty death in Howard County. I mean, it's just, you know, they go to some fires, but he just didn't think it was going to happen. And, you know, I think the whole area was shocked by that. How good of a fire department they are, how their operation works. So how do we get people to understand all these RIT drills that we have to do, whereas they may never ever see the satisfaction, and God knows I don't want them ever to have the satisfaction of, you know, the practice of having that drill. So I'll stop talking and let Josh talk, because I think he speaks better than I do. So
thanks. Yeah, so I am fortunate that I work for a really very small but really awesome and very well supported department. And you can see, even though when we are very tight with maybe our general orders and our physical policies, that you can find room for improvement anywhere. And I remember having conversations with older guys around the kitchen table where you can see, because we're becoming complacent, and it's that phrase is going around right now, that normalization of deviance. You know, we start to err on the side of all the little pieces that we're skipping quarters and cut corners on. And I try to circle back with that and say, well, if we keep cutting these corners because we haven't been caught, you know, with our tail between our legs, this will come back and catch us in these environments. So I try to circle back and close as many of those loops up as I can. And again, for my people, when I was trying to get up and train them, obviously fire ground stuff, if we can make the problem go away, yes, obviously, you know, put the fire out, so many things will change for us for the better. But it's in those instances where that doesn't happen, and sometimes we have to rely on other companies for that fire to go out, and we're the people up on the second floor, you know, cut off or whatever. So it's very, I think there's a lot of areas that you can draw from to say, you know, yes, this actually can happen to us. We have to make RIT operations real. I remember for a while, for our department, the second due truck was supposed to be assigned RIT. So it was a race to get there to the fires first. So that way you didn't have to be RIT. But now we can look back, and unfortunately, because we had our 2018 line of duty death, it's very real for us. And who knows, it may be another couple decades before that happens. And the new generations coming up are not going to have that experience to draw from and to motivate themselves. So we have to find the motivation elsewhere. You know, I'll pull one NOSH report I pull out of Philly where there's a catastrophic failure of a BA in a flashover environment in a townhouse. I say, listen, this happened to this person, and this person did everything right, and it was the crew members that kind of left them hanging. How do we, if that were to happen to us, how are you going to manage your BA failure right now? Like, what are you going to do? And so we do start small. And on the back end, where I was saying that where morale is really built by some stress inoculation and kind of raising the bar, stressing people out over time. I absolutely believe in going to the basics. If you revert back to anything, like, just start with the fundamentals, hammer those constantly. But there are certain periods where I'm going to stress you out. I'm going to do it on purpose. And I want you to experience a little bit of failure, because it's going to happen in real life. So let's manage it now. And it's amazing going through like an entanglement prop, and you'll see people thrash around and they freak out. And you can be that calming voice. It's like, all right, look, hold on. You have, what do you feel right now? Where's the wires pulling at you? What can you control right now? What small actionable thing can you do right now to overcome this situation? And then you can see the heart rate start to drop, the breathing rate drops, and they manage and affect one little thing. And then that will be getting more confidence. And then they'll start moving on to the next piece, and then the next piece. And then they get themselves out of this entanglement scenario when they're in full gear and they're sweaty and their heart rate's up and they're, you know, blacked out face piece. And they come out of it and they're hooping and hollering and cheering because they just went through something they've never experienced before. It was super tough, and they overcame that. And you just make that relatable. I mean, how many NOSH reports can we pull that say that our own people in this nation have gotten caught up in an entanglement environment or a BA failure, or maybe it's just jumping out of a window. So that's where we just have to constantly just stress our people out. I should say constantly. We have to get to the point where we stress our people out, and it's going to build morale. It's going to build that team integrity. And there's something I speak on a little bit about that knowledge use gap. At a certain point, yeah, we can teach all we want. And then once we actually get to the hands-on piece, I can talk to people, but once we get to that hands-on piece, there's going to be that little piece in the middle where people are going to struggle because they're putting all the spoken word now to actual tactile skills. And you can see people get really frustrated with that. And we just have to, again, start with the basics, increase complexity throughout, and then get them to the point to where we just narrow that gap, and we make it real. And just the morale piece that it builds in that team effort, people circle back like, man, I'm really glad we did that. It's kind of like working out. We talked about physical fitness. We work out, we train every day on the shift, we work out every day on the shift, and every single person comes back, you know, they might start grumbling a little bit like, ah, do we really need to do this? Or, you know, I don't, hey, let's, you know, tone it back a notch. And every single person, as soon as you're done, is like, man, I'm really glad we did that. You know, that was good. And then they look forward to it the next shift and the next shift. And then it starts to spread. And then other detailed members come into the firehouse, like, hey, I hear we're training. I hear we're working out today. What are we doing? And that's like the first question they ask. And so just that morale begets morale. Confidence will start to beget confidence. Start with technique over intensity and build towards that intensity as soon as that technique is sound.
I love that phrase, technique over intensity, like smooth is fast. I've heard Scott say that. I stole that from Scott at Drilling at the Speed of Flashover, but he's exactly right. That's a great, great tried and true saying, that smooth is faster. And by building the intensity and the repetition of it, you can get people to be smooth in intense situations. So thank you for bringing that up, Josh. That was really well said.
I told you he's a great speaker, boss. He is, man. He's something else. So
I'm sensing a change of hosts here. I don't know.
He's a good man. I'm getting gray hair. Look how dark his is. So Scott, I mean, for a department, you know, that both you and I know that hasn't really experienced a line of duty death, you know, at a fire per se. I mean, what is the motivation as a company officer that you use for your firefighters? I'm not sure everybody grasps NIOSH reports. You know, I don't think the younger firefighters grasp them as much as we get older and understand morality. We start to grasp them a little better, or unless you have a friend die, they don't grasp it. So what are some of the, as a company officer, how do you push that?
While we haven't had a line of duty, and Chief Alton, by the way, I think I stole that from Daniel Kahn with the Thinking Fast and Slow, which I got from you. So we'll go for a soaker with that one. But we've gotten very close, as you know, Ricky. We haven't had, fortunately, we haven't had to attend an internal funeral, but we've been very close. So first off, not everybody has an opportunity to have probies or rookies. And fortunately, I'm in a place now that's one of those houses where they send them one after the other. And I like it because one of the first things I do with that probie is sign them up for NIOSH's automatic emails. And that way, if nothing else, they will see the ferocity, how often these are popping up in your email box, in your inbox. They may not read them. I think they probably do because they probably don't think they have a choice, but at least at first. But at least they're showing up in their inbox. You get halfway through the year and, your numbers are 50, pretty standard. And, I think that's important. And as a company officer, it's my job to read those NIOSH reports to my guys and girls, and not word for word. But Josh had sent me, I don't know if it's been published yet or not, Josh, but Josh had sent me his article prior to sending it up. And just a wonderful piece that, wasn't necessarily line by line like his presentation, which was fabulous, but it really spoke to my guys. And I didn't give it away, Josh. I put down some bullet points, but, I want to say it was the last three or four bullets, Josh, that you mentioned crew integrity, the fact that you guys work together, not only work together, but you have lunch together, you bowl together, whatever it is you do off duty. And I think that's crucial. Your families know each other. That makes it real, whether it's happened or not. It makes it real when you sit down and say, here's why we're going to train, because you don't want to see so-and-so's, children grow up without Bob, that's the first piece. And the second piece is the building on the basic skill sets, because they might not even know they're RIT training. Like I am, I'd like to be first in, but if I'm RIT on the run, it's game on. I like having the RIT assignment. Just because I want to be, it's just like I want to be the guy when, this building burns, I want to be working that day. I want to be the guy that, unfortunately, God forbid, a mayday does go down, I want to be the guy that's going in, because me and my crew have trained. And as Josh says in his article and said in his presentation, that's not the company you want. That's got the guy's first day out on the field. You've got a guy on detail and a girl working overtime. You know, you hope that they're equally as trained up, but you just can't vouch for that company. You can't say, yeah, chief, I'm ready to roll, because you just don't know. You've worked with this person maybe for 5 minutes. I think just having that mayday, you know, that sort of the Mayday Monday thing on your mind, you know, that we should be looking at running lines. We should be looking at placing ladders, forcing doors, all the stuff that we do. But, you know, at least once a month, there should be some sort of either, you know, fire ground survival, save your own, or, you know, you are the writ on the Mayday event. You know, what's the one task that we need to work on? I mean, the fact that Josh's guys was cutting lines, you know, it's so sad that it happened, but they're cutting wires because the bale's locked off. Like, that's like, who'd ever thought? You know, when I read that part to my guys, it was like, that's crucial. Like, have we practiced that? No, we haven't. All right, today's the day. So, you know, we're always doing the old, you know, swim technique and cutting the cables and pushing the cables up with your tool. But I never thought about what's going to happen when the bale's wrapped up by wires and we can't open the damn bale. That's huge. So, you know, I think the motivation's in the stories. And yeah, we've been very fortunate, but we've also been very lucky. So that's what I got, Rick.
All right, Scott, Chief, we're running a little short on time. We might run a little over. Hopefully Tammy doesn't cut us off, but wanted to follow with Chief Shaw along the same topic. I'll let you get right to it and I'll stop talking.
So I'll try to be pretty brief, but I wanted to kind of sum up something that was just talked about from Scott and from Josh in reference to experiencing failure. In other words, pushing them, giving them that stress. I think that an important part of that is giving permission to the crew to fail. In other words, listen, we're going to stress you and it's okay to fail. Fail here, fail fast, learn from it, and then we'll keep moving on. So I love that idea of the stress inoculation and pushing and pushing and pushing. But every so often, you'd see people just not complete drill or not complete the task and get so frustrated and so embarrassed because they didn't know that it was okay to fail in training. We want you to fail. Fail here. It's fine. Get it out of your systems. You don't fail out there in the real world. So I'm so glad you guys brought that up. In reference to something that should be done monthly, I was thinking about this. And as a company officer, former company officer, I think that what made the most sense to me, what had the best impact, is one, doing something at least once a month that was in full gear as real as possible. So they're feeling all that stress, feeling as real as possible, what it's going to be like on scene, whatever you're doing. Train together as a group, no matter if it's you, a rescue truck, an ambulance, whatever your team is, they're all training. It's not just the engine. It's not just the ladder. It's not just this EMS call that just the rescue is going to do. No, you're training together. Inspire that teamwork, that camaraderie. You train together. And third, again, give them permission to fail. It's okay to mess up in training, to perfect your craft. Get better now so when you're out there in the field, you're that much more professional and you're safer. And like you said before, you're protecting your own that way. So those are the last things that I thought of in the end of here. But this great conversation. I'm so glad that so many of these things were brought up. Good conversation today.
Thanks, Chief Shaw. Chief Heller.
Yeah, this has been a great conversation and really important one. I liked what Scott brought up about giving the probies, you know, the email. They're getting their NIOSH reports and hopefully they're reading them. As probies, they probably are reading them, like you said. One of the local academies here, part of their Fire One program in probie school is they have to study a line of duty death, write a paper on it, and do a presentation to the class on it. And I really like that. I think that's a cool part of their curriculum that brings the reality of our job to, you know, this isn't a t-shirt, this isn't a belt buckle, this is truly the fire department and good and bad things are going to happen and we need to be prepared for them. So those conversations in the firehouse are really important. The other thing I would take out of this is simply the senior man. We've had these, we've done entire programs on the senior man, but the importance of sitting down at the kitchen table and doing just a tailboard talk or whatever you want to call it and drill that way as well. That's how you get some more buy-in from some of your saltier senior guys who aren't big on doing drills. You know, I've found that I've had a few of them in my firehouse over the years. And I'd say, hey, Dave, you know, I want you to go over this. I remember this call we had. I remember you handling it this way. Can you explain it to these guys? Because they've never experienced it yet. And when they do, I want them to learn from the guy who did it. And it was immediately, oh yeah, Cap, that's a great idea, you know. Or he'd grumble a little bit and go, yeah, whatever. And then 5 minutes into it, you see that he's lit up and he's really boisterous about it. And he's got his hands flailing. And these younger guys are sitting there going, holy shit, this guy really lived it. He knows it. And maybe I should pay attention to it. So even the little stuff like that may not show up on the drill schedule is just another form. And for Josh to have gone through what he went through and what you know, I'm anxious to read about it. Other than just, I've heard some snippets, but I'm really interested to read about it because you're right, Rick, for a while there, Rick was the thing, you know, it was cool. It was something. And I remember I took Butchie Cobb's class when I was young, and that's what introduced me to it and said, this is really important stuff. And, the whole thing was, I don't want to be assigned Rick. I don't want to be that guy. Well, I like Scott's attitude. I want to be that guy because I want to be that insurance policy. And I'm a proactive RIT, so I'm still going to do some work. I'm not just going to stand there like a lawn shepherd. So, you know, there's a lot involved to it. And I think this is a great start to the conversation. We could talk for hours and hours. And that's why people should go to FDIC, right, Chief? Thanks, guys.
That's why Josh is going to be the new host, you know. So, Chief Bobby, do you want to say anything before we close out? We're getting pretty close here.
Yeah, just a wonderful conversation. I love the things that were brought up about repetition and fundamentals. I think that, please, you know, if you're at FDIC this year, don't miss Josh's class. Don't miss Scott and Aaron's hands-on. Don't miss Steve's class. Don't miss Ricky's class. All of those classes are basically fundamentals. They're basically the building blocks that you're going to need. And if you're watching this today and you want to talk further with Josh or Scott or Aaron or Steve or Ricky, reach out to us at Fire Engineering. We'll be happy to connect you with these gentlemen. Aaron has a great training company that goes out and they do incredible training all around the world, literally. Ricky's got, you know, a great training company and they travel and train all around the world. And oftentimes they do stuff together. So, you know, don't hesitate to reach out to these folks. You know, they're in the trenches doing this every day. And that's really, you know, you're right, Aaron. That's what FDIC is about. It's about basic fundamental skills, knowledge and abilities, KSAs, if you will, that every firefighter needs to embrace. And when I say every firefighter, obviously there's classes that are more in tune to that, you know, 2 to 5 year person. And there's some that they're tuned to the 5 to 11 year person. And then there's some that are tuned to the, you know, maybe 8 to 15 year person. And then maybe the 10 to 30 year person. But that's about more topical than it is anything else, right? Like if a management class, obviously on finance and budgeting, might not be as relevant to a line firefighter at that point in their career. It may well be, but, you know, that's just the nuance. But no matter what you're studying, even if it is finance and budgeting, there are certain basic fundamentals you have to master in order to be the captain of that ship. And so irrespective of the task, you know, to Josh's point, it's the fundamentals that are going to get you through it. And to Scott's point, you know, it's building incrementally to where you have a tempo that you can adjust to relatively quickly. And that increases your survivability and your entire crew's survivability. So, and a quick shout out, obviously, Tony Carroll, May Day Monday. That's a great thing to look at every Monday. You know, and if you're coming in on a Wednesday, and you should pull that up first. It's up on our site every week. And that should be one of the first things you do in brief. Just that it takes you 3 or 5 minutes. You go through it and boom. And the only final point, if you'd allow me to windbag for just 1 second with the NIOSH reports, they are fine. They're very well done. And the NIOSH people are my friends. They do a great job. But I like to flip them around. And when I read them, I like to try to ask the crews that I'm with to try to figure out why, if that was us that they're writing about, why everything we did in that report we thought was going to work. Why would we have made the decisions that those people made? Because in the NIOSH reports, it's always failed to do this or failed to do that, or should, you know, it's counterfactual reasoning. And that's fine because it's scenario planning for future events, right? But if you really want to learn, look at an event and say, why would I have made the same decision? Put yourself inside those people's shoes, you know, and say, wow, I probably would have done the same thing. Now I have some information that might help me to reassess what would have been maybe my first instinct, right? Because when we read those reports, I always try to remind people that they're before the grace of God, go any one of us, and also that every single one of those people thought what they were doing was going to work, or they would not have done it. And so we have to be careful about ascribing motive to people because what they tried to do wasn't successful. You know, oftentimes things happen that were invisible to them, although now to us they're so apparent because we know the ending, right? But at the time, they may not, for whatever reason, and it's really tough to do. It's that hindsight bias. It's trying to remove, you know the ending, right? So it's trying to remove that and experience what they were experiencing, because it's never as black and white as it is in the next day, right? You know, like I can give you the lottery was yesterday here in Oklahoma. I can give you every single one of yesterday's lottery's numbers. Sunday was a different story. So anyway, thank you so much. And I look forward to hearing, you know, I have read Josh's thing. So I get to sneak behind the scenes from time to time. So, it is compelling, and you are right, Ricky, in your praise of Josh, and he is a wonderful speaker. His video is marvelous, and Scott, Aaron, Stephen, all of you guys are, take these guys' classes, anywhere they are, make an effort, get there, and God bless you, and thank you for what you do for everybody. Thank you. And God bless.
Thank you, Chief, and family. Just wanted to, you know, kind of wrap it up. I know we ran a little long. I think everybody was kind of passionate about the topic today, and hopefully maybe we'll get some different faces on next month, and maybe we'll keep this up. It seems like this seems to be everybody's passion, and especially with, you know, having these company officers and training chiefs on here, I think that's critical. You know, I'm not that guy anymore. These are the guys that are, you know, doing that each and every day, and they need to be heard and by the company officers and the firefighters that are coming up. So, hey, look, so I mean, if we're at FDIC, look, Monday or Tuesday, go get your brains beat out by Scott Kraut, because that scared me, and I thought I was a good firefighter, what Scott was doing. So I don't want to go take the class. I'm really afraid of the failure that I would have. And look, if my class is the same time as Josh Perchik's, go see Josh's. Believe me, it changed the way I think about a lot of things on the fire ground. And I got a lot of gray hair. So if this lieutenant and his experiences makes me change my thought processes, that's a good thing. So it'll help you change yours. So thank you to Bobby Halton, the Clarion Events Group, and Fire Engineering for letting us talk training. So we greatly appreciate it. Thank you.
See you guys. Take care. God bless.